dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans. Welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and as we get ready for this fifth basketball show of the winter, I'll be joined, as I always am, by Jeremy Ward in just a second. First, I want to tell you, DBK Media Service, that's the website you want to check out. Go back and listen to all of our shows from last year during year one, as well as this year and year two, the fall shows. We had 10 of them. And as I said a minute ago, we will be here in our fifth show this week. Also want to make sure the fans know they can get involved in several ways. Our phone number, 740-569-3254. Simply leave us a voicemail. Let us know some comments, questions that you'd like for us to discuss here on SVC Sports Talk. Well, Jeremy, I say hello to you, and I know this past week I spent some time up at the baseball clinic, a clinic I know you're familiar with, and I always think it's neat. You go up there and you kind of charge your battery for baseball season, and then you come back home, and calendar's reading mid-January, which means second half of basketball season. The races start to get tight. Just a really neat time of year for a sports fan. As you get going into the show here this week, give me some of your thoughts on this time of year.
Well, I always loved going up to the coaches' clinic, Shane. Ohio definitely has one of the finest associations, and they do a terrific job of putting that on every year. I always kind of feel sorry for those baseball coaches that aren't involved with other sports because, you know, they put all their eggs in that one basket, and, you know, you kind of sometimes leave shaking your head the things that they're thinking about and worried about in second week in January. Now, as for basketball, at this point of the year, you know, teams, you just can't afford to have mental breakdowns. I think from the coaching standpoint, the pressure kind of shifts to game management for coaches. You're not going to have a lot of surprises. Your main goals are just keeping your kids mentally sharp and physically rested as much as you possibly can because, you know, that grind sets in here at the end of January. You're going to see tired legs the Saturday night games after the Friday night games. And it really, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see who can withstand all that and avoid the injury bug. And, you know, right now I'm interested to see if the Piketon boys and Edina girls can sustain their current level of play because the way they're looking now, you know, everyone else is just playing for second place and a tournament seed.
Yeah, well, I know when I was there at the clinic, this is the first year in a long time I didn't stay overnight up there. I had ended up coming back on Friday night there and watching the Zane Trace Southeastern game. As Southeastern stays hot, Saturday I get up and go down and watch Huntington girls. Beautiful facility in the non-league down at Portsmouth Clay. Didn't realize how nice their facility was. We're going to be talking SVC gyms later in the show is why I mentioned that. Ariel Sams, freshman point guard of Huntington, makes a free throw with 1.6 seconds. They win. And then Saturday night, I was out at Paint Valley. Mason McCloy, big night that night as Paint Valley gets a double win weekend as they start to near toward the 500 mark. So, yeah, just a fun time. Baseball clinic, basketball season, second half, just a lot going on. And, Jeremy, I wanted to take a look at the inbox here. Last week we talked some coaches. And one of the coaches we mentioned was Jeff Lyseth. Well, a lot of responses from last week. And with the news coming out this week that he's going to be stepping away here at the end of the season with his job requirements, four or five emails this week mentioning some things about Coach Lyseth. And the one was saying, do we agree with letting the team know? And then another one was asking, how do you think it will influence this year's team? As you mentioned, you're interested to see how Piketon's going to run its course here toward the second half of their title chase. I guess I look at it as I think it's the each their own. You know, if you're gonna have this situation, Coach talked on the scoreboard show the other night about how he was able to sit down with his team and let them know going into the year, as things started to come out publicly. He talked a little bit about it, and I think, you know, he's at peace with it. And then, you know, obviously the team's a mature team, an older team, which I think obviously helps in this situation. And I think it can almost be a positive rally cry, if you will. I mean, it's just something to maybe give an older team a little bit of shot in the arm. I think they definitely played well this weekend. You maybe call that coincidence, whatever, but they seem to really respond and play hard. Now, Jamie, when you hear about the announcement and you listen to some of those emails, how would you respond to that situation?
Well, you hear things, you know, year to year, speculation, rumors, whatever, and with Coach Lice at the job, you know, it seems like there's always that possibility that, you know, if he were moved to a different area that he may not be able to coach. So I think it's not like a huge shock. And as you mentioned, with a veteran squad, I mean, most of those kids aren't going to be there next year anyway. So I don't know that it necessarily, you know, plays a huge role, you know, how he handles it. But Coach Lithus certainly has earned the respect of his players and has a relationship with his players where he knows what's best for the team. And I certainly respect, you know, whatever he wants to do is the right thing to do as far as his team goes. So, you know, positively or negatively, you know, I don't know if it has a whole lot of impact. It's going to be a lot easier to draw on that once the season ends, you know, in retrospect.
Well, you know, Jeremy, you talk about how much they lose, but that kind of goes into this next inbox question. And the one thing that's neat about the way this one was worded is how the fans have really started to utilize some of the fair, unfair terminology that we were talking about earlier in the year.
Certainly.
This one was talking about Piketon being a top five job in Southeast Ohio. Would we consider that fair, unfair? And there was a combination. They mentioned it a little bit, but another email kind of went another direction. It said, asking about the future of Piketon, if we thought it was a good job, a bad job, whatever. And Jeremy, I'll let you go first on that one, and then I'll follow you up. What do you think?
Okay. Well, hey, you know, first of all, if I'm in Piketon right now, my main priority is taking care of business and enjoying the season at hand. But for those of us on the outside, these are certainly topics that we can take a jab at. As far as it being a top five job in Southeast Ohio, you know, that's probably fair. You do have to be careful focusing too much on past achievements and forgetting to look, you know, where the program is headed or potentially could head. You know, personally, I've not seen enough of their lower levels to have an opinion on the future, but I think the overall athletic program is solid. They have some stability with other varsity coaches and some success in other sports. So I don't believe it's a type of job where you'd put yourself out on an island. But when you're looking at all of Southeast Ohio, there's some pretty strong and prestigious programs, and I'm sure that's a point that could be argued.
Yeah, I don't know. It would take a lot of research and some thinking to start ranking top five. I definitely think if you wanted to call it a top five Division III job, for sure.
Right, right.
But beyond where it ranks, I think it's a great job. When I look at it from just a coach's perspective, if I put on my coach's hat for a second, you have incredible facilities, one of the nicer facilities around. I realize they graduate a lot of kids, but Brewster and Southworth and I believe Farmer's back, Jeremy Farmer, and then some younger kids in their younger levels, if I'm not mistaken. We obviously have a lot of red streaks listening out there. Maybe they can help us out in future shows, but I want to say Moore's younger brothers in that eighth grade group, pretty solid eighth grade group. Coaching staff's been pretty solid. And I'll make this comment, Jeremy, about Piketon in general. The community, the support seems pretty solid. In all sports here of late, pretty good longevity in several of your key sports. And just for whatever reason, maybe it's this group, maybe a lot of the parents and different things as they graduate, their kids graduate, will change. I don't know, but it just seems like in the last 4 or 5 years, there's been a real nice support system in place down there at Piketon. So I would say it's a great job. I think when you look at things like this, you have to go beyond, as you say, just this 1 year, but looking several years down the line to see if it's something that can work long term. But obviously the numbers are really good in basketball. Real quick before we move on, Jeremy, what would you say in terms of the numbers. Is that something you as a coach would look at when you're evaluating the Little League Junior High? Is it more of a personnel thing, or are you looking at numbers and involvement?
Oh, I think numbers involvement, that's a big thing. The way things are right now, you know, if you're going to go take a job, are they going to have a teaching position? Are you going to be able to have assistants that, you know, maybe are mixed between people that you'd like to have with you and people that are available right there already at the school? Because, you know, those are things that I think really determine the success or failure, especially if you're going into a new situation and one in Piketon where there'd be a lot of expectations to succeed. Is you'd want to make sure you had a really good support staff, but you'd also like to step into something where, you know, the lower levels have some continuity and some people that have been there a while, and it's not something not that you don't want to take a part of it, but you wouldn't have to necessarily head up.
Well, I think you make some great points there. And when I think of Coach Lyseth with Coach Legg and Brapson and some other people on their staff, Martin and on down the line there, I know he would be the first to tell you his assistants have played a big role in their success. Well, Jeremy, while the inbox started this week's show on the topic of coaches, I feel it is appropriate that we hear from a true SVC legend on the other side of the break.
Got something to get off your chest? Drop us an email to admin1@svcsportszone.com.
Well, when we talk legends across the SVC, it kind of is appropriate to talk about our Mount Rushmore debate that we've started here in the last couple of weeks, as fans just really, really having some fun with this, sending a lot of different names in. Had a couple Paint Valley coaches in the inbox this week, Gary Newsom, longtime football coach, and then Pete Holland, current football coach, currently just here recently picked up 100 career wins. Pete was also a three-time Coach of the Year in basketball, where his girls won three SVC titles there, two of them gold basketballs. Some Bearcats in the email. Cindy Driggs, what a resume she puts together there. Coach of the Year, I was looking this up today, in four different decades in basketball. 1,000-point score as a player, two-time player of the year. So, obviously, she's been an SVC champion multiple times. And then I thought one that was really interesting, Emily Hammond, because the email gave some interesting stuff on Emily. Most of you will know Emily was as good a female athlete as this league's had back in the mid-90s. Two-time player of the year in basketball and volleyball. She's our fourth all-time basketball scorer at 1852. She's a state champion there in 94. And then volleyball team, pretty sure they went to the state as well. And the one thing that was interesting there, in 4 years, she lost two league volleyball matches. So some excellent choices, without a doubt. One choice that continues to be a constant in the voting is Larry Jordan, the legendary basketball coach at Southeastern. And Larry's someone who I've known for a long time, as I played against his teams, and then I was an assistant coach against his teams, and then I was a head coach against him head to head, and then obviously as media, and then as just a fan in general. But obviously a person getting a lot of attention in the inbox is Larry Jordan. I had the privilege of talking to Coach Jordan over the weekend about the Cider Valley Conference. Let's take a listen to what Larry Legend had to say.
Well, Coach, on SVCSportsZone.com, we've been doing a Mount Rushmore, where we have had fans vote for the different people that have been significant in the growth of our great conference. I'll get to that here in just a second. First, I just wanted you to kind of let fans know what comes to mind when you hear Cider Valley Conference.
Well, I think back to the Ross County first, which was kind of led into it, and then we picked up a couple other schools, or three, four probably earlier when we first got started. I really didn't get into SVC there for a while. We were staying at Ross County, so we didn't have football, so some of the other schools got in a little bit earlier than what we did. But since that time, it's turned into a whale of good conference. I mean, I don't know exactly how many teams we've had in the state tournament in basketball, but I know there's been been multiple teams that have been there, different teams that have been to the thing since this conference has been established. It's had some really great players and a lot of good coaches.
Well, as I mentioned in the first question there, we're starting this Mount Rushmore thing. And kind of like last year when we selected the all-time boys basketball team, the ultimate goal, like our website goal is just to promote, get a lot of names out there and kind of reminisce a little bit. I wanted to get your take on one person that's really coming up that's been intriguing in a lot of the emails for different reasons, is Mike Smith. When you think of Mike Smith and the history of SBC, talk to the fans a little bit about why he's been so important to our league.
Well, Mike Smith's your number one supporter. Has been ever since it's been there, and since he's been on the air, he's the old Grant McDonald of Ross County days. I guess that's the best way I could sum it up to him. That's a sincere compliment to both of those guys. And Mike has paid his dues and went through, and I think he's probably about the top of the mountain right now.
When you've moved on in your career with Waverly, Jackson, Western, now you've had a chance to be in other conferences. Maybe this is a two-part question a little bit. How would you say the SBC stacks up? And as we move forward, what would be maybe your advice now that you look at the SBC from the outside that maybe moving forward you'd want to see the league do a little bit better?
I don't know how you can improve it, really. I mean, it's a competitive league in just about all sports. We've had state champions in basically every sport except basketball, I think. I mean, I think we've had other state champions from other things. I know Adina's had the volleyball success out there, and I think they've had track also, and a lot of football teams in state playoffs and all this stuff. So I really don't know how you can improve it. A lot of people say put more teams in, but I'm not sure with what they've got right now. You would have to really find a couple teams that would really fit, and I think you'd have to go to two. I don't think you'd want to bring one in and make an odd number. I think you'd have to go to two so that some team's not sitting out on the weekend. But as far as improving it, I don't know how we could improve it. It's got a lot of history for a young league, and it's really not a very old league. You know, a lot of the – when I was at Jackson, that league was one of the oldest in Ohio, I think, that went through. But they've went through so many changes over the past few years that I think it's hurt it. And they've had teams in and out and in and out and still got some really good teams in it, but it's not what it was. You know, and so far, what's been at least – 20 years since anybody got out of the SBC, probably.
Jay there, whenever that, late 80s,
yeah,
is that correct?
That's what I would think. I mean, I don't think everybody stayed right in it. A lot of them had to make changes. We had to adapt and get football in our conference and they're in our school to stay in the league and do things like that there. And I think, you know, that was things that happened. Huntington hadn't had football real long, but everybody's adapted to what the league has wanted because it's a good league.
Well, Coach, I know first as a player and then as an assistant coach and then as a head coach against you and then media and just as a basketball fan overall, I know I speak for the entire conference when I say thank you for all you've done for the league and thanks for joining us on this week's SBC Sports Talk.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Again, that's Larry Jordan, and I tell you, I really enjoyed the conversation, not just the interview, but a chance to talk to him there for probably a good half hour. I was able to spend with him and just full of stories and knowledge about SVC and high school sports in general. I really enjoyed that. As far as the Mount Rushmore discussion, Jeremy, I wanted to get your take on this. As you start to hear these emails week by week come in, and we're getting really close here somewhere in the next week or two of putting together a final ballot, if you will, and letting the fans go ahead and pick their four, I just wondered what you thought was the most enjoyable part of the process in selecting the SVC Mount Rushmore.
Well, Shane, I really hope you know, the word gets out and all the SVC fans out there get an opportunity to listen to Coach Jordan's comments, especially as he reflects about the league, about the conference and its history, and, you know, how some people might chuckle at the fact that he calls it not a very old league and talking about 50 years. But, you know, the SUAL, as he referred to, has been around, I believe, since 1921 or 1923. So you're talking about it approaching 100 years. So, you know, from that perspective, yes. But with all the changes and the ins and outs, these other leagues, you know, the SVC really has something special. And what makes it special is the people like Larry Jordan, like Mike Smith, and referenced in that conversation. And it's hearing about the history. It's hearing people's perspectives that aren't from your school, that aren't from your era, that really make it enjoyable, you know, to talk about the league. And it really just builds pride. It builds pride.
Well, I know we talked about on the other side of this, on the hardest part, I know the obvious answer is the narrowing it down to four, but I wanted to kind of to get your opinion on this. Obviously, it's hard to get it down to four, but do you also think it's hard to find enough people like Larry Jordan that can realistically comment on the entire history of the league to make sure that we are selecting the proper people to the final ballot?
It certainly is. And, you know, you're really comparing apples to oranges in a lot of situations because, you know, it truly is a debate. And in all the directions you can go, sport to sport, players to coaches, different eras where the game's changed so much, rules have changed, emphasis has changed, whether it be football, basketball, whatever. But, you know, just weighting one sport over another, or weighting one player's impact over another, it's tough, and you're not looking at everything on an equal playing field because you're going to have your perspective from your home school or, you know, somebody that you followed in your era, and you know, there's going to be a little bit of value to them that you hold closer to your heart.
Well, you make a good point there because I've had the complete privilege of serving on a couple Hall of Fame committees for Uniota and Paint Valley, and we're recently in the process of doing some voting on those. And I always say the hardest part, you'll hear me reference it on the website or on the podcast show, that I feel like I can intelligently speak back to about 1989, 1990 season about things. But if you start to go back into the 70s and 80s, I'm just researching and I'm going on other, you know, in these discussions, I'll say, hey, compare this person to this person in terms of giving me a feel for where they would rank. And I just think that's a really hard thing to do when you start to try to compare people that maybe played a particular sport in 1975 or 1995 or today in 2013. It is a difficult process. I think you make a good point. You know, Jeremy, then talking about wearing the different hats, the one hat you obviously wear in the game of basketball is an official. And, you know, with your ability to give us some perspective on the officials, for fans that don't know, we started here a couple weeks back with a segment that the fans have kind of bought into calling the Liar Liar Stripes on Fire segment. And we last week had some different things that we went to on some of the showdowns, and I thought that was some great discussion. This week we get back to the inbox as we've made these fans wait a couple weeks here. This week's topic talks about, I am amazed at the random 3 seconds call. Junior high, JV, varsity, it is everywhere. What is the actual rule? Is it a rule, in your opinion, that is becoming a little old for today's game? So I'll throw that out there to you, Jeremy, and kind of let you explain the 3 second rule to us.
All right. Well, 3 seconds. Basically, you know, a player must not be within the free throw lane or the key for more than 3 seconds continuously. The lines count as part of the lane. So one toe on the line is the same as standing in the middle of the paint. You know, dead right in the middle of the paint. So I think a lot of times people misconstrue that part of the rule and think, well, you know, if you get your 1 foot out of the lane, it resets, and that's not true. If a player makes an attempt at a goal, there's no 3 seconds. And that is a problem that you see. A lot of people don't necessarily understand that, especially if it's a post player and he's posted up, you know, maybe he's been in there 1, 2, 3, maybe fans feel 5 seconds. And he catches the ball and makes an offensive move, that the count does not continue as he's making an offensive move. And so you get that a little bit. The other thing I'll talk about in 3 seconds that's kind of maybe difficult to understand, and you'll hear officials say it and maybe not really understand what that means, but it's team control. And no team control exists during a shot. basically the ball doesn't belong to anybody. You couldn't say team A is in position, you know, in possession, or team B is in possession. And what you run into a lot, especially at lower levels, is you get that, you know, that sea of players in the middle of the paint and the shot's going up. You don't know if it's a shot or a throw or a tip or, you know, who's in possession or where they're going, and everybody's yelling 3 seconds. And that's the one where, you know, people just aren't understanding the bit of the rule. But those are things that happen depending on the level, why maybe it is misunderstood.
Is it a little old for today's game?
That's what, you know, that's a good discussion. And I had this, you know, after we looked at this last week, I asked a couple guys and I said, you know, 3 seconds, is it something that if you don't hear 3 seconds from the crowd, or from the coach, or if, you know, that is, I will say this, there's, I don't remember ever another player like begging for a 3 second call, but
right.
You know, on the outside, I think that's kind of an interesting point.
See, I thought the Fed asked you this in an easy way. Let me go ahead and put you on the spot and make it a little tougher on you, because I honestly thought this particular email was pretty well worded. I look at it like this, and this is where maybe we'll catch you in the liar. If you're an official, do you have to purposely be looking like, hey, I'm going to call 3 seconds on this trip to see it? Or do you honestly, do you get a feel during the sense of the game that, hey, this dominant post player is gaining an advantage? Is that what the call comes down to, is an advantage?
That's a perfect way to look at it. Advantage, disadvantage. And that's the way really to look at officiating. There are situations where, you know, yes, it is happening. If we're going by the letter of the law, the rule book, yes, that's what's going on. But a lot of times it's advantage, disadvantage, so that you allow flow to the game. And, you know, a lot of teams nowadays, you talk about an old rule, or it being an old rule, a lot of players nowadays, if they're in the paint, it might be a high post as a screener or a passer. It doesn't mean they're not gaining advantage.
Right.
But it's not the same as that post player going block to block with the ball and the swing pass and flashing, you know, to the ball and never leaving.
See, that's a good point, because, like, if you take the rule all the way back to the history of the game, you know, where they started to make the lane bigger with the George Mikan and Will Chamberlain, some of the dominant post players in their air. That's why I ask it that way, is because to me, sometimes you'll see like a ball inbound that you'll hear a 3 second call and you'll look at someone you're sitting to at the game and you'll be like, was the ball even in bounds 3 seconds? Like, you almost feel like an official has to be seeking to make the call, I think, is where the frustration of the fan comes in.
Well, and I think that is you know, I think that's a fair argument as well. It has to be brought to your attention as an official. Not, and I don't mean by people yelling at you, but
you know. So you're not saying that you need some help from the front row there. Oh.
Well, I do, and I appreciate that. I'll appreciate that help. If anybody sees me out, go ahead and, you know, give me a yell if I'm not looking at 3 seconds. You know, give me that reminder. But seriously, the player is going to get your attention. You know, it's not going to be the first time that it happens. And you know, that's, again, it's really that advantage, disadvantage. I think that was a great point that you made at the, you know, that the email talked about.
Well, Jerry, I want to move on here a little bit, because if I don't get some of these in, we're going to get backed up throughout the year, because we're already getting new ones for next week. But some of the other ones were the travel call. They mentioned the spin move or the jump stop or the catch and drive. What are some of the things that maybe a fan wants to look at when they're seeing a travel or no travel?
Sometimes it can look bad and not be bad. Sometimes it can look really good and really smooth and it still be a travel. You know, I think the state has a website where they show all this video and all these examples and, you know, kind of you make the call sort of thing. You remember this on TV. You make the call.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you what, they can break it down and slow it down and it's easy to see. But in real speed and game speed, a lot of that is difficult. And the state really believes that it's called incorrectly, but also that it's not called Right. You know what I'm saying? So a lot of times there's travels that are not travels.
Well, here's one I see on the spin move. Okay, so let's say this is hard to describe, obviously, when we're not watching it. But if a player is going hard to his or her left, and when they spin back, a lot of times the way I used to teach it in my one-on-one workouts with kids is you've got to get that foot down. Because what happens is they spin, and it's basically a 1-2, and that's a travel as they go. But let me throw this at you. It seems if they shoot it quickly off of that move, they get away with it more often. Is that fair? Whereas if they kind of come around there and make another basketball move or some type of a pass, a lot of times that's when the whistle comes into play on that spin move.
That's fair. And you know, again, and I think at the lower levels, this is where you see this is a huge issue with fans, coaches, players, whatever. Number one, the player skill isn't as developed, but in the lower levels, you have two officials. And when you only have two officials, you know, you basically have one with the ball, and then, you know, you have one with the other players, and they're going to be blocked off. So anytime there's a pass to the wing, and then the player catches and drives, yeah, he might travel. There's no way the official is watching a group of bodies and his feet and going to get that called consistently. So that's something to think about. I know if I go to a two-man and do a junior high game, it's a nightmare trying to keep up with travels, not only because you're trying to decide sometimes do I call everything. You know, you can't really do that. You want there to be flow in the game, advantage, disadvantage. If the kid takes off running and beats his man to the basket, then you kind of got to call it. But if it's just a quick shuffle 60 feet away from the basket, does it have to be called? And, you know, and again, it doesn't make it right or wrong either way, but that's a decision that has to be made and just something to think about.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, this segment's a lot of fun. Obviously, the fans are enjoying it. A lot of comments coming in. You can use the inbox or you could even use the phone number, 740-569-3254. Leave your question, comment about a particular call or a situation in the game of basketball, and we'll put Jeremy on the spot there and make him uncomfortable. Well, Jeremy, the inbox this week referred back to one of last year's shows while asking us to look ahead into the future of one of the league's current stars. Fans, stay with us, and I will explain on the other side of the break.
If you're an iPhone, iPad, or iPod user, you can use Apple's iTunes to subscribe to our podcast. Just search SVC Sports Talk on iTunes and hit the subscribe button.
Well, fans, I tell you what, the star that I was referring to is Jenny Grigsby, and the inbox was referring back to last winter when Eric and I were talking about Jenny and some of the colleges and what kind of player she could be at the next level. It was referring to a prediction of maybe where she was going to end up on the all-time scoring list and how we felt a year later about her college opportunities in terms of basketball. And I guess when I look at the scoring list, and this is a page you really want to look at on our website. I appreciate the email making the nice comment about this page, because it is a page we've worked really hard on over the years, but it's our 1,000 point club. And you'll notice that on the girls and boys basketball page, you'll see that logo there. What it does is over on the right side, it ranks the kids in the order of their school. And then down the main list, it ranks in the history of the Side Valley Conference. Just a great, great history page for our conference. But as I look at Jenny's current position and I see where I think she can get to, a lot of times this comes down to tournament success. I think of some of the people that that have gotten to certain points and then they've gone on to have another 100-150 points in the tournament, where they've had the opportunity to maybe play 6-7 games compared to 1 or 2. I think the safe bet's going to be somewhere between that 1,200 and 1,300 mark. You're going to see somewhere around that top 25 there, the Janae Driggs, Cindy Noble, Chrissy Higginbotham. I think that's a safe bet. But I'll say this about Jenny real quick, and Jeremy, I'll get your comment. It's not her makeup isn't what you would call a pure scorer. Like when I look down through the list and I think of some of those people, again, that I've been old enough to watch in person since, say, 90, I don't know that I would say that Jenny's just your pure scorer, just scores mentality. she does it in such an efficient way, and she's such a complete player that I think what the college is getting is, yeah, maybe a kid not perfectly sized for the position she's going to play or have the perfect quickness for a position she's going to play, but you're getting high basketball IQ. You're getting good fundamentals. You're getting efficiency. You're getting a great student, great athlete, great attitude. And I think it could really be a steal for some colleges. What's your take, Jeremy, on Jenny Grigsby as you've watched her over her career?
Well, I agree with everything that you said, Shane. You know, she really impresses me about as much as any player, boy or girl, that I've seen around the area the past couple years, mainly because of her consistency, her versatility. Like you said, you know, she's not flashy or dynamic in the sense of that typical high school star that you'll see, you know, top 20 scorer all time in a conference maybe, or your prototypical, as you put in your mind. But that, I think, is probably, you know, her finest attribute as a next level player, because she rebounds, she defends, she passes well, she understands the game. And that's really what makes you attractive, not your point totals, because, you know, at the collegiate level, when they see that stat sheet, and the only thing that pops out is the scoring, or the only thing you want to talk about is the scoring, they want to, you know, they're not recruiting all those girls that tried to defend you. But you got to defend those kids when you get there. And I think that's what sometimes, you know, people, you know, fail to look at. And I think she certainly has the other parts of the game that are necessary to succeed, not only to go to college to play basketball, but to be a basketball player once you get there and to have some success and help a program achieve success.
No question about it. And I think with this topic coming up in inbox, I think it's a great time in the show to transition to our C&K Athletic Equipment Fast Break. As always, Jeremy will take the lead and I will follow up. So without further delay, let's get out and transition. Let's go to the girls' fast break.
What from the Good Health Chiropractic Center SVC basketball scoreboard jumped out at you over this past week?
It wasn't a great week outside the conference for SVC schools. And as a, you know, I was just thinking, as the tournament draws, as that nears us on February the 3rd, it's really important that teams take care of business. In most cases, the seeds are going to fall in order of record, like I said earlier. But, you know, a bunch of teams could have similar marks, and you'd like that non-league win or that win against a bigger division to really be a sticking point for you when it comes to that seeding meeting.
Well, Jeremy, it's interesting you went that team route there, because in some of those particular teams that you're talking about that maybe have struggled, a couple individual performances have caught my eye. I noticed with Uniota, as they look to stay right where they're at the second half of the season to set up a rematch with Edina, Rutherford, Taylor Overly, both starting to score the basketball a little bit more, giving Uniota a little bit more depth. Obviously, Strawsball's triple-double jumps out at you anytime there's a high school kid do that. She earned our Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week honor for that. But just some overall good individual performances.
Analyzing the Valero standings at the halfway point, which player appears ready for a big second half that will propel the team to an improved spot by season's end?
Well, I think Shane mentioned a couple of kids that you see, like at Uniota, where an increase of scoring, an increase of production. I think you could say the same about a few of the girls at Zane Trace, and their ability to score, maybe making Zane Trace a little more dangerous. But I'm going to go with Ashley Lawhorn from Piketon. She's had a couple of big games this year. She's really improved, I feel, from her freshman year. And now that Piketon gets back healthy, if she can handle the ball without turning the ball over out front, you know, hit the outside shot and free things up for the big girls underneath with Pelfrey and Jenkins, I certainly think Piketon can improve their second half mark.
Hey, I like that pick, Jeremy. I just watched Ashley that night. She scored 20, really learning to create her own shot. I think I'm going to go a little bit younger. I say younger, I mean, Lawhorn's only a sophomore, I guess, but I'm going to go to the freshman class. Sam's at Huntington with Stone Rock Robinson up at Westfall. I think those are some kids that definitely have the ability to continue to help their teams get better. Yeah, I think Huntington is continuing to improve. They could sneak up and get one or two teams second half. And then Westfall really, I think, has the ability, if they can play up the potential, to move to maybe even three spots in the standings.
Viewing the Embroid Me schedule, what second half rematch is most intriguing to you and why?
I'm going to point to Zane Trace and Uniota, partially because it's this week and both teams seem to have adjusted their style of play. You know, Uniota's because of injury, and I think Zane Trace, as the players got a little more comfortable with what they were trying to do on offense. I really expect a little higher scoring game this time and maybe a more competitive game from the start as the previous matchup. You know, Zane Trace kind of didn't catch fire till the end.
Well, I think the easy answer here is to go to early February and say Adina at Uniota. I think that could obviously have a lot of gold ball implications. It could have our league implications on the line. But that's a long way off, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that as we get closer. But I'm going to go to the 22nd of January and say Paint Valley visiting Zane Trace. When I think over last year, the second half, and this year in the first half, arguably the two best basketball games I've seen, or at least two of the top three or four, would be when Zane Trace visited Paint Valley. I think this Paint Valley team they're dangerous. They have some ability. Zane Trace has played real well till here of late, and they've slipped up a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see what those two teams have to offer on the 22nd out in Kinnikinick.
Looking over last week's update of the Adina Sports Medicine SVC stats, who is this year's SVC stat sheet stuffer?
Well, depending on your perspective and your view of statistics in general, I think you could go a couple different directions. You know, certainly Overly, Grigsby, Carl, they all come to mind. And when you look at the differences between those three players, Overly being a point guard, asked to do a lot, take a lot of shots, handle the ball, take pressure, other team's best defender usually guarding her, and still being able to produce night in, night out. With Grigsby, a little more well-rounded, scoring from different spots, contributing to the offense in different ways, being a great defender, turning that into offense. But maybe having quite a few games on the schedule where, you know, they're up by a great deal, and maybe she doesn't get as many meaningful minutes as some of the other girls. You know, maybe her stats suffer a little bit. She would dominate this category. Who knows? And then Haley Carl, you know, they've had tons of close games. She's all of her minutes are meaningful, and she certainly contributes the stat column every night out.
Well, I'm the first to admit that I love stats, and people who know me, they know that. But I think that sometimes the stat sheet doesn't tell the whole story. If you look at like a Charlene Stout of Paint Valley and all that she's asked to do, that, you know, maybe doesn't have a certain statistical category for those things. You can't go wrong with Carl, top five in just about everything we put on the website. But two kids that I would add to what you said, Jeremy, would be Natalie Cooper and even Kylan Strasball now. Obviously, Strasball's big week. She's going to start to move up some categories. And then Natalie Cooper is a kid that, even though maybe the scoring doesn't go with it, if you go down through all the other categories, she really impacts the game in several different ways and gives a lot to the top team in our girls league. Fans, as you noticed throughout our four questions there, we are highlighting some of our main sponsors. Chris Good, the Good Health Chiropractic Center, SVC basketball scoreboards on both the boys and girls side. Chris is out on 231 East 2nd Street in Chillicothe. Give him a call, 740-773-GOOD. And, of course, Valero, South Paint, Kingston, Southeastern, Bourneville, Western Avenue, Bridge Street. That's the All-American Gasoline, Valero. Just about every stop on the SVC tour, hard to do that without making that a part of your evening. So I definitely appreciate those. And if you agree, disagree with anything we said, let us know, 740-569-254. And as we move back to the inbox, it kind of takes me to that phone number. We had a call a few weeks back. It was talking about role players and how early in the year some of these role players, some of the younger ones, being real comfortable at home, maybe not so comfortable. In fact, Bruce, do we have that audio for the listeners?
This is for SBC Sports Zone Podcast. First, I'd like to thank you guys for what you do for the league and the kids in the league. I think the website's great and the podcasts are awesome. But in the first cast, Jeremy mentioned having the challenge of having two different age groups and that have ability, and as a coach, being able to balance that those groups without alienating either group. I think it also create some challenges from a coaching standpoint, knowing which situations suit each group yet best. I thought the Zane Trace Union game was a perfect example last Saturday when you watched some of the younger players from Zane Trace thrive at home in their environment, and some of the younger kids for Union seemed to struggle a little bit down the stretch with the student section and the crowd seemingly on top of them. I thought maybe you guys could give a little insight and talk a little more in depth on this. Got some young, talented players in the league this year, as well as some senior groups with a lot of varsity experience. So if you guys want to talk about that a little bit, I think it'd be great for the show.
Again, that was some audio from the show a couple weeks back, and I thought it was important, again, let some of the fans hear that in case you missed it, because this week one of our best inbox responses comes from a guy who was a little bit behind, said a little crazy work schedule, just now listening to two or three shows in a row, and talks about how it's a great point, and this has continued to be a factor. It ends by saying, I would also throw in that some players, young and old, have a certain place or certain teams they think they can't beat. Thanks for taking my email. I love the show. And, you know, this is an interesting point, Jeremy, because I think a lot of times what happens, these kids grow up third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, and they get used to beating certain teams. They get used to getting beat by certain teams. And when you look around the league, just to throw some things out there, Hutton, sophomore, Mowry, freshman, Rittenhouse, freshman, that's at Zane Trace, Uniota, Strange, sophomore, Overly, sophomore, Corcoran, sophomore, Hosley, freshman, a Southeastern, sophomore, junior, loaded. So I think what happens sometimes is you do see I see the Zane Trace kids play at home, then I see him play on the road the other night. I think I'd be lying if I didn't say the younger backcourt didn't really do anything wrong. I just didn't think they played with the same quickness, the same pace, the same confidence. I've seen this with Uniota's team a little bit. Southeastern's role players I've seen a little bit. I thought the Skeens kid was terrific the other night at home, second straight home game, and where he's really sparked the Panthers. So when we talk about this, Jeremy, what are some of your thoughts as we continue to break down having younger and older players and taking on the challenges of going to some of these hostile gyms?
Well, sometimes when you look at, especially looking at the younger players, you know, you always want to see that potential and where they're headed, and sometimes you get in too big of a hurry for them to get there, and you have to give them the opportunity to kind of learn from those, and sometimes you have to learn from mistakes. You can't prepare them, and what you might see happen is that lack of composure or that lack of a presence with the ball, or on defense on the road your freshman or sophomore year, where you kind of feel like you froze up or you made that critical error perhaps, or maybe you just didn't make a big enough impact. That's what's going to stick with them, and as they grow, that experience is what's going to make some of these kids just unbelievable players.
Well, if I go fair or unfair with you, Jeremy, as we break down this first half, I think we agree that Python is the most talented team, but perhaps beyond the talent, would it be fair to call the biggest X factor to this point Piketon's experience?
Oh, certainly. I certainly agree with that. And as some of the other teams have battled through that, and just like you said, you see teams and, you know, I mean, they're high school kids. They're 15, 16, 17 years old, and you're not going to get the same thing night in and night out, and we all realize that as fans and as coaches and what have you. But it's certainly fair that through all the battles that those Piketon kids have been through, even in baseball and football and their successes, they've got a huge advantage over these other kids that are maybe learning on the fly, so to speak.
But you and I watched them that night. They lose at home playing without Zach Farmer. A little bit less experienced team could have really hit the panic button. They needed a buzzer beater to beat Southeastern, and then to be honest, they had no business winning the Zane Trace game there that we talked about a couple weeks back. So a 6-1 basketball team easily could be 4-3, and I think we making the point of experience, I think that's definitely that's something that's pretty important.
Yeah,
I think
and this you is can. A, yeah. yeah, Shane, you can argue from the other perspective that, you know, you could look at Zane Trace, you knew it, a Southeastern, and say the exact same thing on the flip side. You know, had they had, you
good
know,
point.
Is this happen, you know, well, then they're the ones that are sitting with one loss. So I think you could argue that from both sides and really make to the point and what make this such a great addition to the show from the inbox and from the call there back in the, I believe, the second show.
Well, you think about it. We're just halfway home here, so this is obviously something we're going to get to continue to follow starting this weekend with Friday, Saturday night in the SVC. This is a great time, Jeremy, to go to our C&K Athletic Equipment Fast Break on the boys' side. As always, Jeremy will take the lead, and I will follow up. So without further delay, let's get out and transition. Let's go to the boys' Fast Break.
What from the Good Health Chiropractic Center SVC basketball scoreboard jumped out at you over this past week?
Well, the warm front must have brought in double-doubles because we sure had a lot of them. And we had some by freshmen and sophomores, McGloy, Hosley, Shanks, and then you've got Detillion, Beam, Smith, and Allen. And nearly we had two 20-20 games as Beam almost matched McGloy's efforts.
Well, I think when I look at the scoreboard, I can't help but notice how hot Southeastern's getting. Great balance. When you look, Heiss, Miles, Skeen, Strawsball, Cartier, Kello, Allen. I mean, they've really got seven guys that it wouldn't surprise you a bit to score 10, 15, maybe even 20 points on a given night. And as they start to really find their identity on the defensive end and they're starting to play with good pace and share the basketball, this is a really, really dangerous basketball team going the second half of the year.
Analyzing the Valero standings at the halfway point, which player appears ready for a big second half that will propel the team to an improved spot by season's end?
Well, Shane, I really like what you had to say about the Southeastern Panthers in our first question. And when I look at this question, I immediately think of Nick Kello from Southeastern. With all the balance and the contribution the Panthers have had, if he can get hot from the perimeter because teams can't focus on taking that away, and he's able to score in bunches on a nightly basis, Southeastern could make things really interesting for the teams ahead of them in the league.
Well, no question about it. I know last week we were looking at the three teams at 3-3 at the time, being Southeastern, Westfall, Huntington. I'm going to go with Westfall, Huntington, and look, I think Stone Rock and Vickers are going to be there night in, night out. I think it's going to be the group that can get the most help. I like what you said about Elijah Shanks. A lot of double-doubles here late. I think it's four of his last five. And then I'm going to say Westfall's David Robinson because, again, I think that the more consistent the guard play and the decision-making gets there, the more difficult Westfall's going to be to beat.
Viewing the Embroid Me schedule, what second-half rematch is most intriguing to you and why?
Now, I want to point to Zane Trace at Unioto next weekend simply because, depending on how things pan out, this game, whoever comes up on the losing end, it could really kind of send them in panic mode as far as their chance at winning the league. So I think it's just going to be a huge game. And, all the points we've talked about each of these teams are really going to be brought to light in this matchup.
Well, Jeremy always does a good job of keeping me in the moment because here I go again wanting to fly all the way to February, but I'm going to go to the 8th of February when Zane Trace travels to Piketon. I really feel like that could be the night that we figure out who our SVC champion is, be it Zane Trace, Piketon, or maybe even still Uniota.
Looking over last week's update of the Adena Sports Medicine SVC stats, who is this year's SVC stat sheet stuffer?
Well, I had to take a lot of time with this question and looking through and again trying to decipher the stats and who's playing against whom and this and that. But at the end of the day, I think with Zach Farmer at Piketon, considering, you know, what he does and how he does it in a variety of ways, playing multiple positions, guarding multiple positions, just showing you how valuable of an athlete he really is.
I think the thing I notice when I study the stats in boys is how much deeper the rosters can get, and with the different roles, how it leads to some different people maybe not showing up in as many categories. Obviously, post kids like Beam, Dottillion, and Stone Rock are going to do a lot with their post categories. Farmer's a great choice. I'm going to even add in Craig and Moore there, because I think what happens, Jeremy, with boys, we just talked about it in our young versus old, is as kids get older, you see like a Moore or Farmer be able to impact the game in other ways without scoring the basketball. And I think when I see like a Pierce Mowry in five different categories, it just shows you his ability as a freshman. And I think what's going to happen as he gets another year under his belt here, you're going to start to see him understand the different ways to do that. So he's a kid that I would definitely throw into that mix. Again, fans, you'll notice the mention of the sponsors throughout our fast break. One of those was Embroid Me. That's on 10 Health Drive, 740-774-7400 for all your SVC apparel needs. And then, of course, Adena Sports Medicine, the official sponsor of SVC Stats. Listening to your coach is one thing. Listening to your pain is everything. Again, check out Adena.org or call 740-779-4598. Fans, you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, the inbox at admin1@svcsportszone.com, and we want to take a look real quick at that inbox. And Jeremy, as we get toward the end of the show here, we had a great email talking about best gym. And I tell you what, this was a long email. It was talking everything. It wanted to know about parking, walking into concessions, to the gym, fan-friendly atmosphere. I mean, it listed the entire criteria. But when you hear best gym, what's some of the things that come to your mind in the SVC?
Well, first of all, this is a great question, and these are the types of questions that we want to see come in from the fans, whether it be in the inbox or through the phone call or just a comment on Facebook or Twitter or what have you. Just the involvement and the ideas, these are some of the things that we enjoy talking about, and I'm sure everybody else does, you know, whether they're going to or from a game or, you know, maybe just hanging out in the summertime wishing it was basketball season. But when it's come to best gym, you know, we have some great choices in the SVC, and I've been able to maybe experience different aspects, even doing officiating a little bit, kind of coming in the back door, so to speak, and seeing behind the scenes. But I really like Southeastern. I think there's great fans. It's a great environment. It has probably the best parking flow for getting in and out. The concessions are tremendous, and you even get an exercise as you walk down the hallway there to work off that hot dog or that popcorn or whatever it is that you have. But, you know, overall, the atmosphere there, even though it's a large gym, and it seems like that's one of the places where even if it's not full, the atmosphere is still really good. And that's kind of the downfall of some of the newer, bigger gyms, is if they're not full, do you lose all the atmosphere?
Well, you make some great points, because Piketon and Southeastern, it's hard to debate those two being the nicest facilities. But the one thing, when you look at like Huntington and Uniota and Paint Valley and Westfall, with some of the older gyms, I don't know if they're as fan friendly, maybe a little bit uncomfortable in terms of sitting and watching, especially if it's packed that night. But I'll say this, that's where I go to some of the best atmospheres in terms of a high school basketball game. You get the band going in the small gym, and it's loud, and you know, and you're right on top of the court a little bit more. It kind of gives you that old school feel. So I think atmosphere wise, that's one thing to look at. Where I think with Adena, Piketon, Southeastern, even Zane Trace, a little bit spreads out a little bit. I love the walk around the top of the Zane Trace, but I'm not a big fan of some other aspects of their gym. So, yeah, if I'm just looking best gymnasium, I would have to say Piketon and Southeastern. But as Jeremy said, what a great email. That's admin1@svcsportszone.com. Love to have you in, email us some different things to talk about on the show. And then, of course, you can also have your voice heard, 740-569-3254. Well, that's all the time we have this week. So until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for DBK Media Services, and for my co-host Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportszone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.